Psachim, Perek Vav, Mishnah Aleph, 6:1, new Perek, and we are now going to talk about the relationship between the processing of the Korban Pesach and Shabbos. So we already said back in Mishnah Ches of the previous Perek that the basic procedure that was described over there was carried out whether it was a weekday or Shabbos. Our Mishnah will now elaborate further on precisely which parts of the Korban Pesach may be done on Shabbos. They're Doche Shabbos, they supersede Shabbos, and which parts not. The basis of the Korban Pesach superseding Shabbos in general is that the verse refers to the Korban Pesach as having to be done b'mo'ado. The pasuk says in B'midbar, v'yasu v'nei Yisrael es ha-pesach b'mo'ado. They'll do it in its appointed time. And a similar word of b'mo'ado is used referring to the Korban Hatamid, the daily offering brought morning and afternoon, as the pasuk says, Tishmaru lahakriv li b'mo'ado, be careful to offer it to me in its proper time. And the Gezerah Shavah connects the two, that just the same way the daily offering, the Tamid, is offered every day and processed even on Shabbos as a regular weekday, so too the Korban Pesach, which must be offered on the 14th of Nisan, has to be done even if it is a Shabbos. So the Mishnah is now itemizing the specific steps, and it says, Eilu devarim b'pesach. The following items are steps in the processing of the offering of the Korban Pesach that are dochenes haShabbos, that supersede the halachas of Shabbos. First of all, shchitaso, the actual slaughtering of the animal. Don't forget that shchita is one of the filamitas malachas, so it would be this d'oraisa to shecht an animal. Nevertheless, the Korban Pesach may be shechted on Shabbos. Vizrikas damo, the application of the blood. According to Rashi, this is just part of the, dragged along as part of the procedure, but wouldn't be aser medurabanan even, meaning it would be mutter to apply the blood. Others, however, learn that the application of the blood is something that would be aser medurabanan in as much as it resembles tikkun mana, like fixing something. Kind of the same way we have learned in previous mesechtas how you can't take your trumas and maestras, the different tithes that come from agricultural produce, can't be removed on Shabbos because you're sort of fixing the food to make it edible. So too, the application of the blood is the matir, it's the event which renders permissible the consumption of the korban. And the truth is there are two players in the consumption of the korban. There's the consumption that Hashem does, as it were, with the haktara, the offering of the emurim, and there's the consumption that the Bailim, whoever owned the Korban does, or the Kohanim will do, and other Korbanos on the case of the Korban Pesach. So the Matir, the thing which allows it to happen, is the application of the blood, and therefore the blood application resembles like fixing something and making it from inedible to edible, and therefore you might think it's Asur Medurabanan, or maybe Asur Medurabanan, but on the case of the Korban Pesach and that lands on Erev Pesach lands on Shabbos, we do the application of blood anyways, because no choice in the matter, because it has to be done b'mo ado. Umichui kravav, the scraping out, the cleaning out of the intestines. Remember, the intestines are actually going to be roasted with the Korban Pesach. More about that later on. But the point is, we're going to eat them. And, excuse me, remember what intestines are, right? Intestines are the place where the excrement of the animal gathers and is expelled. So when you shaft an animal, a ruminant certainly, there's going to be likely to be a lot of excrement in those intestines, and those will of course spoil and go bad and make the whole animal smell, etc. It's not appropriate in terms of the covet of the korban, the honor for the sacrifice, and therefore we're going to get rid of this excrement by scraping out the intestines. Normally scraping out intestines would be a malach of dash, or at least with a rabban usher because of dash. Disha, threshing, is removing the wheat from the chaff, so the concept is taking something out of its moorings, out of its, you know, container, and that's the case here also, the same way the Rambam learns that, you know, bloodletting or donating blood would be a mulach of dash, extracting the blood out from the veins, if you will. So here too, you're extracting out the excrement from the intestines, which would be at least medurabanan usur, because you don't want the excrement, but medurabanan, it's usur because of dash, but it's permitted on Shabbos, in the case of the Korban Pesach, for the sake of the honor of the offering. The hekter chalavav, same goes with the offering, meaning the burning of the emurim. Chalavav here literally means the those forbidden fats, which is the chalav is a good part of the emurim. We said also it comes to include the kidneys and part of the liver. and those are also included. Those must be burned on Shabbos. Now, the truth is, b'di'eved, if after the fact, if you offered those emurim after Shabbos, everything would still be okay after the fact. But l'charchila, ideally, one should offer them on the day that the animal is slaughtered, meaning on Shabbos in this case, and therefore we will be doing the haktara, the burning to make smoke of the innards, the sacrificial parts, on Shabbos, even though it would normally be usher, because you can't cook things and burn things, etc. Aval, however, tzliyaso, the actual roasting of the Korban Pesach, which is a mitzvah to itself, but it certainly could be done after Shabbos, and doesn't need to be done on the 14th at all, that is forbidden. That would be considered like a told up bishul of cooking. Can't do that on Shabbos. Vahadachas kravav, the rinsing out of the intestines. So it was the cleaning of the intestines has two parts. There's the mechanical kind of scraping or squeezing to get out most of the excrement, but then there will be some left on the inside of the walls of the intestines that has to be cleaned out properly. That requires like rinsing, like water rinsing, and that can be pushed off till after Shabbos because it's such a small amount and won't cause the smell outside of the animal and make it spoil. So therefore, hadachas kravav, the rinsing out to fully clean the intestines, einan dochen es Shabbos, those meaning the hadachah as well as the cooking of the Korban Pesach, don't supersede Shabbos. Instead, they must be done on Motzei Shabbos afterwards. Now, we'll have a few things here, which, according to the Bar Tanur, are asar midirabanan. And we're going to say they're also forbidden for the Pesach, because they could have been done beforehand. The first is harkavaso, the bringing in of the animal on one's shoulders. So, according to Bar Tanur, this would be asar midirabanan. He isn't going on the fact that Jerusalem is probably a place you can't carry only Aser Midurabanan, because perhaps doesn't hold that. And also there could be even, Rosh Hashanah, like a freeway, so to speak, right outside the walls of Jerusalem. But he focuses on the fact that there is a shita in the Tanaim that Chai Noses Atmo, a living creature, carries its own weight in part because it shifts its weight as it's being born, and that being the case, the person who's carrying the animal isn't doing a whole malacha. He's doing part of the malacha. Part of the malacha is being done by the living creature, and therefore it becomes only an iser midirabanan, not a full iser d'oraisa. The truth is that the halacha is not like this. The halacha is we say chai noses atzmo, the living creature does help carry itself, but only if it's a human being who's conscious about shifting his weight to sort of help himself being carried. Whereas an animal, certainly not. An animal may actually make things much harder to carry by shifting its weight in the inconvenient way. Therefore, although lahalacha we don't say chai noses atmo when it comes to animals, the Mishnah here and our Tana is saying that, at least according to the Bar Tanur, and because he wants to have an aser midir button, as you'll see why soon. Second of all, v'havasa mechutz l'tchum, bringing in of the animal from beyond the tchum. We just learned Maseches Erevin, you recall that you can't go beyond, let's say, 2,000 amos beyond your home on Shabbos. Carrying beyond that point would be aser. Although there is a shita, Rabbi Akiva, that it's Isra Doraisa, we're talking about Isra Durabun here, we're going that approach. So, Midurabun, you can't bring animals from beyond 2,000 amos from home, wherever they were, because Shabbos came in, if that's defined. So, bringing that on Shabbos also is Asa Midurabunan. And finally, Vachatichas Yabalto, a Yabelet is a wart, and it's a mum, it's a blemish, which renders a offering non-offerable. So if the Korban Pesach shows up and it has a yabelet on it, you can't bring it. You have to first remove the yabelet. Now, removing the yabelet on Shabbos would be aser, because of the malach of gozes. Gozes, cutting a part off a living animal, like cutting one's hair, shearing a sheep, etc. Comes gozes. The pashtus is gozes has two guises. One guise is removal of the hair because you want the hair. One guise is like removing of the hair because you want to improve the pelt. So here it would be taking a similar form of removing the abelet, the wart, to improve the offering, the animal. So it shouldn't be a balmum, shouldn't have a blemish. That would be aser midoraisa. But the Bar Tanur understands here we're not talking about the doraisa version. We're talking about, let's say, if you use your fingernails to rip off the wart, so then you're only now in durabunin territory because you're not using a scissors or scalpel, which would be the normal way to do it. It's only an abnormal way, and therefore it's durabunin. But in all those cases, even though they're usher just midirabanan, you cannot do them on Shabbos to enable yourself to bring in Korban Pesach because you could have done them before Shabbos. And that's where the Mishnah says, ein dochen es Shabbos, those kinds of things do not supersede the Hilchos Shabbos. You can't do them on Shabbos. even if it means you won't be able to bring your Korban Pesach. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Dochen. Rabbi Eliezer holds, and this is a shita in general, that we learned back in the 19th parak of Shabbos, if you have a mitzvah to do, and the mitzvah is permitted on Shabbos, the mitzvah is Docha Shabbos, so then all the hechshemitz, all the preparatory acts that will lead up to enabling you to do the mitzvah, even if you're talking about far back in the chain of events, all those things are permitted to be done. In other words, the classic case over there in the 19th parak of Shabbos is to do a bris milah on Shabbos, which is permitted. You can start chopping down trees to make charcoal, to forge iron, to get a knife, to do the bris, etc. All that's going to be okay, according to Rabbi Eliezer. Chacham disagree with that, and here you see that sheet again, that anything that could be done before Shabbos, which is the klal that Rabbi Akiva puts forth on Shabbos, and again here in our Masechta, in the next Mishnah, anything that could be done before Shabbos must be done before Shabbos. Anything that can't be done before Shabbos is permitted to be done on Shabbos if it's for the sake of the mitzvah. And more on this discussion in the next Mishnah. Pesachim Perek Vav Mishnah Beis 6-2. This Mishnah follows directly on the heels of the previous. In the previous Mishnah, we had discussed the question of whether one could do an Isser Derabanan to enable him to fulfill his obligation of bringing the Korban Pesach, if that Isser Derabanan was a shvus, a prohibition, a rabbinic prohibition of breaking Shabbos, to enable one to do his Korban Pesach on Erev Shabbos. So, for example, may one bring the Korban Pesach in from beyond the Tchum, from extending beyond 2,000 amos past we could have normally taken it, so that he'll have an animal on the 14th of Nisan on Shabbos. And the previous Mishnah said, no, you may not. While you could do the Doraisa things that are required from Shechit and onwards, to do something that you could have done beforehand, like ready your animal beforehand, you simply can't do, even if it's only forbidden midirabanan. Now, on that, Rabbi Eliezer had disagreed, because his position is that any mitzvah that's Doche Shabbos, like, for example, doing a bris milah on the 8th day, meaning Bizman on the proper time, which happened to fall on Shabbos, just as you can do the bris milah, because it pushes off Shabbos, so too could you do any preparatory act, even an Isser d'oraisa, to enable you to do that mitzvah on Shabbos. So, for example, with coming to the bris milah, you could chop down a tree, which is an Isser d'oraisa, so that you could make charcoal, so you could forge the metal to make the knife, to do the bris milah. Rabbi Eliezer says that's all fine. And the Chum reject all that, even the derabanans. Now, notwithstanding the fact that that's Rabbi Eliezer's shita across the board, here in our Mishnah, he's going to try to convince the Chachamim that even according to them, meaning even if you ignore the principle, or you don't accept the principle, that one could do an Isser d'oraisa, that's a hechsher, that's a preparatory act for the sake of doing a mitzvah on Shabbos, at least you should do Isser d'rabanan, because those are, of course, just rabbinic in nature, and if you can do a d'oraisa, like, for example, shechting an animal on Pesach, which is an Isser d'oraisa normally, so for sure you should be able to bring the animal in from beyond the Tchum, which is just an Isser d'Rabbanan. And so, although Rabbi Eliezer, he doesn't need that Kol V'Chomer, he doesn't need that logic, because he has the basic principle that you can always do anything, even a D'Oraisa, he tries to convince here the rabbis that at least they should be lenient regarding rabbinic issues that were enumerated in the previous Mishnah, such as the bringing in of the animal on his shoulders, carrying it on Shabbos, or bringing it from beyond the Tchum, or cutting off its wart in an unusual way. And now you see why in the previous Mishnah, the Bar Tanura wanted to establish all three of those things to be rabbinic prohibitions in nature, even though, for example, the principle of Chai Nosetz Atzmo, the principle of carrying an animal and saying you're not Chai of even Rishus HaRavim for carrying an animal because the animal partially carries itself, although conventional halacha is that only applies to human beings that bear their own weight, but the Bar Tanura wanted to include also animals, the shita derabanan, that it's only derabanan even for animals, because he wants it to be a list in the previous Mishnah of examples of rabbinic violations. So now here the Mishnah says, Eil devarim, excuse me, it's Perek Vav Mishnah Beis. Am Rabbi Eliezer said, Valo dinhu. He tries to prevail on the Chacham by saying it's logical that one should be able to carry the Korban Pesach in from beyond the Tchum, etc., doing those Issei Derabanan, because Ma im Shechita Shei Mishum Melacha, when it comes to the actual slaughtering of the animal, which is an Isser D'Oraisa on Shabbos, and yet the Torah says you may do that. Why does the Torah say that? Because, as we said, the Pasuk says that the Korban Pesach has to be brought B'mo'ado in its proper time, like the Torah says that the Korban Tamid must be brought by Mo'ado in its proper time, and the Gezeirah Shavah says just as the Mo'ado, its proper time for the daily offering, teaches you even if it's on a Shabbos. So we say that also the Mo'ado, referring to the Korban Pesach, tells you that it should be brought even at its proper time in the 14th of Nisan, even on if it falls out on a Shabbos. So, Ma'im Shchita Shimashim Malach Adochas Shabbos, even Shchita, which is, you see that Shchita, which is a Doraisa, and yet it supersedes the rules of offering your Korban Pesach and shechting it, supersedes the rule of Shmir Shabbos, and therefore you shecht it even though it's Shabbos. Elu, those items listed in the previous Mishnah, like for example, the Durabanans, like for example, the three listed were carrying on your shoulders in a Rishus HaRabim, or carrying it from beyond the Tchum, or removing its yabelis, its wart, in a unusual way, like with your fingernails, etc. Shehen Mishum Shvus, those are only restricted rabbinically. Midoraisa, one would be allowed to do those things. Lo Yidchu Es HaShabbos, isn't it imminently logical that the Torah that the din should be, the rule should be, that one is permitted to do those Isurei Durabanan on Shabbos to ensure he fulfills the obligation of bringing his Korban Pesach b'modo in its proper time. So, again, just one more time, that means Rabbi Elazar is arguing to them, even though he doesn't need this Kol V'chomer. So responding to that, Amar lo Rabbi Yeshua, who is the Bar Plugta, the typical person who argues with Rabbi Eliezer, he responds and says, Yom Tov Yochiach. Rabbi Yeshua says, no, you can get a proof from, bring a proof from the halachas of Yom Tov that your logic is not sound. It rejects, you can reject that Kol V'chomer, because how? Because everyone knows that when it comes to Yom Tov, one may not do malacha, just like Shabbos. However, on Yom Tov, things that are called tzarche ochel nefesh, things that you need, everyone needs, like for eating on Yom Tov, is permitted, as the pasuk says, Ach asher ye'achal chol nefesh hu levado ya'aseh lechem, to provide food for people on Yom Tov, one may do, for example, one may shecht an animal on Yom Tov to enable ready food to eat on Yom Tov. So Rabbi Yehoshua says you can see from the laws of Yom Tov that your Kol V'chomer, Rabbi Elazar, doesn't apply. Because on Yom Tov, you're allowed to shecht an animal, and that's going to be okay, even though normally shechting is forbidden, but for the sake of having food, it's permitted. And yet, you can't do Isurei Durabanan that could have been done before Yom Tov, meaning you can't bring an animal in from beyond the Tchum so that you can shecht and eat on Yom Tov. So you see that it doesn't follow just because you can, that a Isur Doraisa is pushed off, like Shechita for Yom Tov, that the Durabanan will be pushed off, because, for example, bringing in from beyond the Tchum isn't pushed off on Yom Tov. That's what he says inside. Amar Rabbi Yeshua, Yom Tov Yechiach, those halachas of Yom Tov will prove that your argument is fallacious, because Shehitiru vo b'shum malacha, they permitted doing malachas on Yom Tov for the purpose of Tzarchi Ochol Nefesh, v'asru vo m'shum shvus, and nevertheless, they maintain that the rabbinic prohibitions stay in place. Like, for example, you can't bring your animal in from afar, breaking Isur Durabanan of Tchum, in order to shecht it. So you see, we can reject your logic, Rabbi Eliezer, that just because Doraisa is permitted means that the Rabbanan should be permitted as well. And it seems exactly analogous to the case of the Korban Pesach. You can shecht the Pesach, but you can't bring it from a distance. You can shecht an animal for food on Yom Tov, but you can't bring it from a distance. Amar lo Rabbi Eliezer. Now, Rabbi Eliezer responds back to Rabbi Yeshua. Maze Yeshua. Yeshua, meaning Rabbi Yeshua, what in the world are you talking about? Ma raya reshus la mitzvah. How could you possibly think that you could bring a proof, or really a disproof, from Yom Tov, when that is a reshus? It's a voluntary. No one said you have to eat food on Yom Tov. So how could you bring that as an analogy to the obligation that you must bring the Korban Pesach? And that would be a compelling reason why you should relax even Isurei Durabanan, if one would otherwise not be able to fulfill his obligation midoraisa. Now, of course, Rabbi Yeshua was no dope. He certainly would have seen that coming. The thing is that Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer have a different machlokus, a very fundamental machlokus, on the nature of Simchas Yom Tov, on if there is indeed a mitzvah, let's call it, to eat meat on Yom Tov. This backstory on that for just a moment is that when it talks about the seventh day of Pesach, the pasuk says Atzeres LaShem Elokecha, it'll be a holiday for God. That's the seventh day of Pesach. But when it comes to Shmini Atzeres, that's like, I'll call it the eighth day of Zman Tzimchaseinu, like the day after Pesach, the pasuk there says Atzeres Tziyeh Lachem, it will be a holiday for you, the people, as opposed to, in contrast with to Hashem by the seventh day of Pesach. So are the Jewish holidays for Hashem or for us? So that seems to be a contradiction. And to resolve that contradiction, they have two approaches. According to Rabbi Eliezer, he understands that people have options. If they want to dedicate their entire Yom Tov to Hashem, they're permitted to do so. And if they want to indulge in it themselves and eat and drink, etc., they're permitted to do so. It's a rishus. And that being the case, there's no mandate to, let's say, eat meat on Yom Tov. However, Rabbi Yehoshua says no. He understands that the tension between the two psukim, saying sometimes that saying that the holiday is for us and for him, Hashem, is that it's chetzio l'Hashem and chetzio l'Chem. Half of Yom Tov, meaning part of Yom Tov, is dedicated to Hashem. There's all sorts of requirements for davening and learning, whatever. And there's also chetzio l'Chem. There's also components of Yom Tov which are obligatory for you to enjoy. Simchas Yom Tov, eating meat, let's just simplify it, it's called that, is an obligation to rejoice on Yom Tov. And that being the case, Rabbi Yeshua held that the eating of food and the slaughtering of the animal to have food to eat on, fresh food to eat on Yom Tov is a mitzvah. And therefore, it is a perfect analogy to the Korban Pesach, the same way you have a mitzvah to eat this animal, either on Yom Tov or offer this animal in the case of the Korban Pesach, and therefore we're letting you shecht it, both on Yom Tov and on Erev Pesach. We are not letting you bring it in from beyond the Tchum, for example, doing this to Rabbanan, in either scenario, says Rabbi Yeshua. So it's a perfect setup. But Rabbi Eliezer disagrees with that because he held that anyways, Simchas Yom Tov is just a Rishus, so it wouldn't be an applicable objection. So that means that, according to Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Eliezer has not got a good proof. So Rabbi Eliezer, but according to Rabbi Eliezer, his logic should still stand. So now Rabbi Akiva is going to respond. Rabbi Akiva, for the record, was a student of these two men, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. And actually, it's important to know he's from Rabbi Eliezer's students, because that's part of the story here. So Rabbi Akiva responds to his teacher, Heishu Rabbi Akiva v'amar. Rabbi Akiva said a new approach to reject Rabbi Eliezer's contention that you should be able to violate Isurei Derabbanan to bring Korban Pesach. Rabbi Akiva says, Hazaa tochiach. You can prove it from the laws that apply to the sprinkling of the mechatas, that para aduma, the red heifer water, should the seventh day of one's tahara cleansing process fall out on Erev Pesach. So just here's the backstory. Backstory is, if a person becomes tamei, he can't bring korbanos and he can't participate in the Korban Pesach. If a person gets exposed to a corpse, one way or another, he's tamei, and that would make him not able to participate. If one becomes tamei through exposure to a corpse, so that's a seven-day process, and the tahara from that seven-day process includes both sprinkling of this mechatas, the paradum water, on the third day of seven, as well as the seventh day of seven, followed by going to the mikvah, and then a person will be tamei for the rest of that day, meaning on Erev Pesach he'll still be tamei, but once you have nightfall, and it's like Leila Seder, the 15th of Nisan, so now he will still no longer be what's called Tevul Yom, and having any vestige of Tumah, and he'll be able to participate at the Pesach Seder, eat the Korban Pesach, etc. So the question is, therefore a person is going to have a mitzvah on the seventh day of his Tahara process, should it fall out on the 14th of Nisan, and be a Shabbos, the person's going to have a mitzvah to do the sprinklings, which would a mitzvah because that enables him to become tahor and participate in the Korban Pesach. The question is, may one do that sprinkling on the 14th of Nisan if it falls out on a Shabbos? And the answer is no, one may not. And that's going to be a given. Now, how is it a given? Rabbi Akiva learned this from his Rebbe, Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer apparently has forgotten, the Gemara speaks this out, had forgotten this halacha. But Rabbi Akiva brings it to the fore, and he does it in a in a finessed way, so not sort of stick it to Rabbi Eliezer, since Rabbi Eliezer had taught it to him, and basically just says, listen, we have a data point. Data point is that you can't do hazaah, the sprinkling of the mechatas, on Shabbos, even if Shabbos falls out on the seventh day of one star process on Erev Pesach, meaning if you don't do the hazaah, this person will not participate in the Korban Pesach. But the din is, too bad, you can't. Now, why can't you do hazaah, the sprinkling on Shabbos? So the Bar Tanura brings a shita of Rava. It's actually machlokas between Rava and Rabba in the Gemara. According to Rava, like the Bar Tanura speaks out, the issue is it's mechzik and masakin. It looks like you're fixing the person up. We kind of had the thought of applying blood looking like you're fixing something up, and we talked about it other times about the tithing, fixing the food up, etc. So here we would say that sprinkling on the person looks like you're fixing him up to make him tower. And that's why you can't do it midrabbanan. According to Rabbah, a different pshat in the Gemara, it's because rabbis forbade sprinkling on the Shabbos because they were concerned people would come to carry the mechatas, that paradum water, in the rishus haram in order to become tahor. Meaning the same way you have a mitzvah to shake a lulav on the first day of Sukkot, and you have a mitzvah to blow a shofar on Rosh Hashanah, but in the event that it's a Shabbos, the rabbi said, even though there's a mitzvah, we're not blowing shofars on Shabbos, we're not shaking lulav on Shabbos, because we're concerned people will carry the shofar and lulav on Shabbos. So too, you may have a mitzvah to be matar yourself on the seventh day of your tahara process, but we're not letting people do tahara, because it means somebody somewhere in some generation might come to carry the mechatas, that paraduma water, in Rosh Hashanah. That's Rabba's approach. Either way, the point is that given data point, it's forbidden to do hazaah on Shabbos, even if it means a person won't be able to come Torah and able to participate in the Korban Pesach. So, that being the case, you have a clear example of an Isra Durabanan, which is forbidden, even though it means one couldn't participate in the Korban Pesach. And that will be the data point that Rabbi Akiva brings to bear here, in order to show Rabbi Lezer that his logic is not compelling, it's not true necessarily. Here's what he says. Heishiv Rabbi Akiva va'amar. Rabbi Akiva responds to Rabbi Lezer, and he says, Hazah tochiach, the rules, the halacha, the prohibition against sprinkling on the seventh day in Shabbos will show you. Shehi mitzvah, first of all, it's a mitzvah through the sprinkling. Vi mishum shvus, and nevertheless, it's forbidden midrabbanan through the sprinkling on the seventh day on Shabbos, even if that would mean now that you can't participate in the Korban Pesach. Venadoch es Shabbos, it doesn't push off Shabbos, so you see clear precedence that you don't break Yisrael derabbanan for the sake of bringing the Korban Pesach. Af ata al tisma al elu, and therefore, says Rabbi Akiva, you shouldn't be surprised at the list from the preceding Mishnah, that you can't do other isurei derabbanan, like carrying the animal on your shoulders, bringing it from beyond tchum, cutting off the wart, etc. Sha'af al pi shehen mitzvah, even though those are mitzvahs to do, meaning if you don't bring the animal in, you won't be able to bring your offering, etc. Vehen mishum shvus, and they're only asar midurabbanan, as you described before. Nevertheless, lo yidchu es Shabbos, the rabbis did not permit the doing them on Shabbos, meaning we keep the derabbanans and we don't do them, clearly rejecting Rabbi Eliezer's logic. Amar lo Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Eliezer responds back to Rabbi Kiva and he says, va'alea anidan. He says, that's the very point I'm talking about. I'm trying to bring you a proof that you could do things like hazaa, which are only asur derabanan, in order to enable you to do your Korban Pesach. So this is like a bit of, these are my words, of course, an awkward moment for Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Akiva only learned the halacha of hazaa being forbidden from Rabbi Eliezer. And yet, Rabbi Eliezer seems to have forgotten that. And he says, I'm trying to argue that you could do it. So Rabbi Akiva is going to be forced in a minute to take a nuanced tact. We'll see in a moment. So this is Rabbi Eliezer's then contention, which is just as you can do the shechita, you should be able to do the hazah. Uma im shechita shi mishum malacha. Slaughtering an animal is an isra d'oraisa. And do'ach es Shabbos. And yet you could slaughter the animal on the 14th of Nisan in order to bring a korban pesach. Hazah shi mishum shvus. The sprinkling of the mechatas waters, which is only asr medurabban, eno din shed doch es Shabbos. I'm trying to tell you, it stands to reason you should be able to do the hazan, notwithstanding the asr medurabban, and do it so a person could do his korban pesach in the proper time. But moado, amlo Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, listen, we have two data points. We know that, and one of them, I'm going to focus in here for a second, is that you cannot do hazan. So if that's true, so then perhaps you could, Rabbi Akiva, in an attempt to sort of show the spurious nature of Rabbi Eliezer's argument, he says, Maybe Amar lo Rabbi Akiva ochilof. Maybe it's just the opposite. Maybe we'll learn from the fact that you cannot do hazah, that you for sure can't even do the shechita on Erev Pesach. Now Rabbi Akiva knows that is false because he understands that there's an obligation to do the shechita even if it's a Shabbos, but he's like focusing on the other given. There are two givens which are, you know, running afoul of each other, but he's focused on the given that you can't do the shechita to try to that you can't do the hazah to sort of remind and prompt Rabbi Eliezer to remember that he's the one who said that, and that would then bring him to realize that his logic is flawed. But as we'll see in a moment, Eliezer doesn't get the hint. Amar lo Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, O chilaf, maybe the opposite's true. Maybe uma im hazah shehi mishum shfus, given that you can't do hazah on Shabbos and it's only a simur derabanan, ein odochas Shabbos, and yet you cannot do the hazah, meaning you won't be able to participate in the Korban Pesach this year. Shchita shimishum malacha, shechna animal itself was even more severe. It's a doraisa. Ein odin, wouldn't it be logical to say shalo tidcha es Shabbos, that you shouldn't be able to do shchita at all and be Machal Shabbos in order to bring Korban Pesach? That's Rabbi Akiva's attempt to sort of make Rabbi Eliezer realize, but he doesn't realize. And therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says, what you're saying, Rabbi Akiva, actually makes no sense at all. Amar lo Rabbi Eliezer, Akiva, akar tamasha kasa b'torah. You've totally undermined what the Torah said, I don't call it explicitly, but pretty explicitly with the Gzera Shava. It says, Bein ha'arbaim, on the afternoon of that 14th day, on Erev Pesach, you have to bring Korban Pesach, b'mo'ado, in its proper time. And we just finished saying in the beginning of this Mishnah, mo'ado tells you it has to be brought on the 14th, even if it's Shabbos. So you do shecht it. Bein b'chol, bein b'shabbos. Doesn't matter if the 14th falls out on a regular weekday or even on Shabbos, you have to bring it. So the shechita is required. So don't try to tell me you can't do the shechita. So Amar lo Rabbi Akiva, haveli mo'ad le'elu kamo le'shechita. Rabbi Akiva says, yeah, the thing is that everything has its proper time, and that's what's to understand from this psukim and the resolution of this tension between no hazah and yeshchita. Everything has its proper time. Klal Amar Rabbi Akiva, meaning what has the proper time, the shechita has its proper time on the 14th, and the bring of the animal, etc., has a proper time before Shabbos. Kol Amar Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says this is the guiding principle. Kol malacha she'efshar la'asosa me'erev Shabbos. Any malacha that you could do before Shabbos comes in, eino doches Shabbos. That would not push off Shabbos. That would apply here in our context to things like bringing the animal or cutting off the wart. It would apply back in, Rabbi Akiva says it over there, it would apply back in the 19th parak of Shabbos with the Bris Milah. You can't start cutting down trees because you could have cut down the tree and gotten the knife before Shabbos, and so on and so forth. That's the rule, and same goes in Yom Tov. You can't bring the animal in, even though you could check it, because you could have brought it in from before Yom Tov, etc. Shechita she'ev shalal so smer of Shabbos. But as for the shecht the animal itself and all the steps there afterwards, since you certainly cannot shecht it on the 13th, you did it before Shabbos, meaning before the 14th of Nisan, you wouldn't do the mitzvah on Moado. Those things, and only those things, docha es Shabbos. Those are the things that push off Shabbos, and that's the halacha. So halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, and indeed halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer, that while one may do shechita, etc. on the Korban Pesach, one can't do any issur derabanan, even if it means he won't be able to do his Korban Pesach, because he should have arranged things from before Pesach, from before Shabbos. Sachem Perek Vav, Mishnah Gimel, 6:3. We now begin to transition to a new topic, and that's the topic of a special offering that's brought on the 14th of Nisan, aside from the Korban Pesach. And that's a Korban that's referred to as the Chagiga Haba Im HaPesach, the Chagiga offering, the celebratory offering that's brought with the Korban Pesach, or sometimes called the Chagigas Arbaasar, the celebratory offering of the 14th. And this is, let me make sure this is clear before we get any further so people shouldn't be confused. This is not the Chagiga that's brought for Pesach, okay? There's a separate mitzvah all to itself that three times a year the Jews should show up in the Beis HaMikdash and be seen, and when they're seen by Hashem, so to speak, they should not show up empty-handed. And empty-handed means that they must indeed offer two separate offerings, each of the three regalim. One is the Olas Re'iya, and one is the Shalmei Chagiga. Olas Re'iya, the holy burnt offering, entirely burnt offering, that an ola that's offered when one is seen. That's the mitzvah ri'iyah, to be seen there in the Beis Hamikdash. And the shalmei chagiga, that's the shlamim offering, that's the chagiga, the celebratory offering that's brought, and which at least most of it is eaten by the person who brings it. It's a shlamim, so some goes to the mizbeach, some goes to the kohanim, some goes to the people who bring it. And that would, the shlamim, the shalmei chagiga, would constitute the basar, the meat that people eat in celebration of the Yom Tov, as in Simchas Yom Tov. We talked about that just in the previous Mishnah. That's the idea, what to do Simchas Yom Tov, and that could be brought, that could be done, you could bring chagigas throughout the holiday of Pesach or Sukkot, etc. Those would be called Shalmei Simcha, rejoicing Shlamim, but the obligatory one, at least one for each of the three regalim, is the chagiga, the Korban chagiga, or the Shalmei Chagiga, the Shlam, that's the Chagiga, the celebratory Shlamim. Okay, all that has nothing to do with this Mishnah. This Mishnah is an additional Chagiga that's brought, so to speak, like, if you will, a fourth Chagiga, if you will, that's brought on the 14th, the day before Pesach. And it's to accompany the Korban Pesach under certain circumstances. The basic idea here is, according to our Tana, it's not actually an obligatory Korban. It's coming to supplement the meat that's eaten at the Pesach Seder, we'll call it, and Leila Seder, to ensure that you can fulfill the mitzvah of eating your Korban Pesach al hasova. Al hasova literally means something like on satiety or something like that. But the idea being that when one eats the Korban Pesach, he should eat it at a point where he's not very hungry anymore, and it should bring him to full satisfaction. So it's sort of at the end of the meal, if you will. And that can't be done if there's not enough meat to go around. So when there's not enough meat to go around from the Korban Pesach, that one wouldn't be eating it al hasova. Again, so just to be clear, the rationale for al hasova, eating it when one isn't especially hungry anymore, so he can complete his meal and feel satisfied by virtue of eating the Korban Pesach, is the pasuk learned from a pasuk. The pasuk, it's Bamidbar Yudches pasuk Ches, says lecha nesatim lemashcha. It's given to you for like a regal consumption, if you will, and the way that royalty consume food is, you know, both not out of great hunger nor and to satiety, to fullness. So that's the most learned. There are those, by the way, who learn, for the record, that the obligation to eat the Korban Pesach al hasova when you're not too hungry is simply because of din derabanan, lest you come to break the bones, because Shviras Ha'etzem, the breaking of the bones of a Korban Pesach, is an Isra D'oraisa. But either way, the point is, the Korban Pesach must be eaten so that you're not so hungry anymore and bring it to full satisfaction. And that requires, under certain scenarios, where there's not enough meat to go around, supplementation. So what would the supplementary meat be before you eat your Korban Pesach? That would be this Shlamim, this Chagiga that's brought on the 14th of Nisan. Okay? So we're talking about that sort of voluntary and sometimes obligatory, but not sometimes necessary offering. Just to make sure we're clear here, that chagiga, which is a shlamim, a generic shlamim, peace offering, must be brought during normal operating hours, so to speak, of the Beis Hamikdash, meaning in the afternoon before the Tamid Shel Ben Harbayim, the daily offering of the afternoon is brought. In contrast, as you said before, the Korban Pesach is brought after that, because it's towards the Erev, towards the evening, after the Ben Harbaim, the Tamash of Ben Harbaim, the afternoon offering is brought. Okay, so we're talking about that supplemental, additional offering brought to supplement the food supply when needed. So the question in the Mishnah says is, Emasai mevi chagiga imo, when does one supplement his offerings that he brings on the 14th to include also this chagiga? Bezman shehu va b'chol b'tahara uvamut. Provided you have three criteria met. The first is, we're talking about the 14th of Nisan falls out on a weekday as opposed to a Shabbos, because since it's not a chova, not a strict obligation, if it's going to fall out on a Shabbos, the 14th, you're not going to shecht voluntary offerings on the 14th. You can't slaughter voluntary offerings on Shabbos, as we said already a number of times, and therefore you'll have to find some other way of supplementation, you know, I don't know what, bread and soda to fill you up before you get to the Korban Pesach, whatever it is. That's when I say bread, I mean, of course, chametz, free bread, matzah. Okay. Second of all, b'tahara, you wouldn't bring the chagiga if you were tamei. Now, that might sound obvious because you can't bring any korbanos when you're tamei. But the thing is that when it comes to the obligation of being tahor, there's a special waiver. We'll learn more about that later on in the next parak, and so that when the majority of Klal Yisrael is tamei from exposure to dead bodies, they bring the Korban Pesach anyways. But that wouldn't apply to the Chagiga, and for the Chagiga of the 14th is not brought if the people are tamei or the person is tamei. And finally, uvamuat, when there is short supply. This is referring to the fact that you have potentially a short supply of Korban Pesach meat, meaning small male goats and sheep in their first year, to feed all the Jews who've come for Lila Regal. So if there's not enough of those to go around, so then you'll have to supplement by bringing a second offering called this Chagig of the 14th. Okay? Uvazman shehu va b'shabas b'meruba uvatuma. If you have a scenario where you're bringing your Korban Pesach on a Shabbos, or when it's in the amount of korbanos of psachim aren't great supply, or betuma, or you're bringing that Korban Pesach in a state of tuma, just with the special waiver, as we said before, ein mevinimo chagiga, then the chagiga of the 14th is not brought with it. Now, we said the same thing twice, essentially, once in the positive, once in the negative, and the reason why, perhaps, is because if you know, there's actually another interesting nuance. The list in the first sentence says, b'chol b'tahara uvamuat. You don't bring it when it's a weekday. I'm sorry, you do bring it when it's a weekday, when everyone's tahor, and when there's not enough food otherwise to go around. So the analog, the opposite of that should be, instead of b'chol b'tahara uvamuat, it should be b'shabbos, b'tuma, and b'meruba. But it doesn't say that. It says b'shabbos b'meruba uvatuma. So it switches the order around, meaning that b'meruba, when there's lots to go around, is out of place. The order is not maintained. And the reason why, says the Tiferes Yisrael, is we want to make sure it's clear that if there's meruba, if there's a lot of Korban Pesach meat, effectively, per person to go around, so then one is actually not to bring this Chagig on the 14th, the same way he's not to bring it if it were a Shabbos or if he were Tameh. It's strictly not to be brought. The reason why is because if it is brought, there'll inevitably be not enough food for everyone, not enough space in everyone's stomach to eat all of the Korban Pesach, and there's a separate Isser d'Oraisa of leaving over the Pesach till the morning, which will become inevitable if people first gorge themselves on other meat before they get to the Korban Pesach, and therefore the point of the Mishnah here is if there is enough meat to go around, so then one may not bring this Chagiga, lest his Korban Pesach is not completed and some meat is left over. Psachim, Perek Vav, Mishnah Dalet, 6-4. This Mishnah will be a brief Mishnah that differentiates the Chagiga we were talking about from the Korban Pesach, identifying its differences. When it comes to the Korban Pesach, there's a number of rules. Learn out from a simple pasuk which says, Se Tamim Zachar Ben Shana. It has to be a Se, that means either a goat or a sheep. It's a Zachar, meaning a male, goat or sheep, Ben Shana, in its first year, less than a year old. Those are the requirements for the Korban Pesach. The Chagiga, however, can be essentially anything. The Mishnah says, Chagiga, as the Chagiga, Haisa Ba Min Hatzon Min HaBakar. It could come from the Tzon, the flocks, that means goats and sheep, or Min HaBakar, that refers to the cows. All Zvachim, animal sacrifices, must come from those three possibilities, cows, goats, and sheep, ignoring birds. Min HaKvasim or Min HaIzim, the Chagiga can come both from Keves, which is sheep, and Eiz, which is goat. The point of the Mishnah here, which is that's really synonymous with Tzon, is to tell you that there's no concern that it could get mixed up with the Korban Pesach, and therefore you might have thought there's some restriction against bringing things that resemble a Korban Pesach. No, you can bring anything you want as the Chagiga. Not a problem, no concern of that. Min Zecharim or Min Nekevos, and that's true also that you could bring a male or a female Chagiga, in contrast with the Korban Pesach, which must be a male. V'ne'echeles l'shnei yamim v'layla echad. Another difference is that the time frame in which one may, in fact, must eat the Korban Chagiga is different than for the Korban Pesach. Korban Pesach you must eat on the night of the 15th, Leil HaSeder, and really you'll have till midnight, that's all. So it's a short window of time, call that 6 hours, if you will. When it comes to the Chagiga, so like any Shlamim, you have the day on which it was brought. Remember, all Korbanos are brought during the daytime hour. So if today, for argument's sake, is Monday, Yom Sheni in the Jewish calendar, so you can bring it any time during Monday day, and you'll have the whole rest of Monday day, the rest of Yom Sheni, to eat it. That's the first day. You have the whole night following Monday, we'll call that Monday night, up to Tuesday morning, the beginning of what we call Yom Shlishi. And then you'll have the whole of Tuesday day, meaning the rest of Yom Shlishi, until Shkia. sundown on Tuesday. So you have 2 days, Monday day and Tuesday day, and one night between the two. That's the standard time frame for all shlamim, the different karbonos, the different time frames, but for shlamim, that's the standard time frame, and it applies to chagiga as well, in contrast with the Pesach, which is the one night till midnight. That's all the Mishnah has to say for itself. The truth is there are a couple other very salient differences between the Korban Pesach and the Chagiga, which the Mishnah doesn't mention here. It does mention in Tzvachim. And that would include that the Korban Pesach specifically has to be done for Menuyav, for the people who are in the registry, as opposed to the Chagiga, which can be for anybody. And also the way in which one prepares, meaning cooks, the Korban Pesach is specifically by Tzli Eish, roasted over a fire in very specific ways. We'll see more about that in the Mishnah is coming up later on. But the preparation of the Chagiga can be however you want. So for example, while one may not stew the Korban Pesach, because that would be called Bishul B'maim, cooking it in water in a stew, one could make a lamb stew with the Chagiga and eat at the Seder. That's no problem. Pesachim Perek Vav Mishnah Hei, 6-5. This is a fairly involved Mishnah. Be'ez Hashem, I'll explain it to you clearly the first time. You'll get it the first time. You just got to pay attention. Okay, so the basic machlokas around which this Mishnah revolves is whether if a person is Mechal Shabbos, he does it, which is forbidden on Shabbos Midoraisa, he does it Bishogeg, that means inadvertently, he didn't know what he was doing was a violation of Shabbos. So in normal circumstances, such a person must bring a Chatas, a sin offering. That's the general rule. Our Mishnah is discussing the question of what happens if a person is indeed Mechal Shabbos Bishogeg, he makes it inadvertent violation of Shabbos, but he does it while he's intending to do a mitzvah. He does an honest mistake, and it turns out he actually achieves at least some modicum of mitzvah. So in such a scenario, do we still force him to bring a chatas, the sin offering? Remember, he was trying to do the right thing. He actually achieved something positive. It was an honest mistake. So do we make him bring a sin offering anyways? So Rabbi Eliezer says, yes, you do. You're Mechal Shabbos, you desecrate Shabbos, you bring a chata, simple as that. Rabbi Yehoshua says, no, if you made an honest mistake and something, at least some level of mitzvah came out of it, then you'll be exempt from bringing the chatas. Now, that machlokas is actually old news. It features back in the 19th parak of Shabbos, back in Masechet Shabbos. So there we had the question of if a person gives a bris milah to a child who's 9 days old on Shabbos, but he thought he was an 8-day-old child. So that is, you're not supposed to do that. You're not allowed to give a bris milah on Shabbos unless it's for an 8-day-old child in its proper time. And this, therefore, was forbidden, but it was an honest mistake. And the bottom line is you did a mitzvah of bris milah. Not supposed to on Shabbos, but it's a bris milah nonetheless. So there, Rabbi Yehoshua said he's exempt from the chatas, and Rabbi Eliezer says he's chayv. So that's the same kind of machlokas over here. Just here, there are a few more pieces in the puzzle which make it more complicated and give Rabbi Eliezer an opportunity to try to convince Rabbi Yehoshua that, at least in this scenario described in our Mishnah, that Rabbi Yehoshua should agree that a chata should be required. Okay, so to understand the piece of the puzzle in our Mishnah, there are two basic premises you need to understand. The first is, as we actually said earlier in the Masechta, when one is offering an animal which was consecrated as a Korban Pesach, but when he does the shechita, or for that matter, he does the kabbalah, the receiving of the blood, the halacha, the bringing of the blood, or the zrika, the application of the blood of that animal, and he has in mind a different category of offering, meaning, let's say, he's offering a Korban Pesach, but he thinks he's shechting a chagiga, or applying the blood of a chagiga, etc. So that will invalidate the Korban Pesach. Now, totally invalid, nothing can be done with it, got to start again. So it's puzzle. In contrast, most korbanos, if you do them, it's called shalol deshma for the wrong category. You have the wrong category in mind during the blood avodas, the shechita, etc. So then, after the fact, the offering is kosher. It's kosher in as much as one could still bring the emurim on the mizbeach, etc. So it's not totally invalidated. It doesn't mean that the person who was trying to bring some korban doesn't have to bring a new one. He does, because he doesn't get credit for it, so to speak. But at least the actual offering, if you have in mind, let's say, a chagiga, and you have in mind that it should be a Pesach, which was wrong, this was consecrated, this animal was consecrated as a chagiga. When the person does the shechita, he's thinking this is a korban Pesach. No, that was a wrong move. But after the fact, b'di'eved, the animal, the offering is still kosher. It was a mitzvah of a hakrava, of a korban, just the person had to bring a new chagiga in that scenario. Okay, so again, so that's the first difference, that if you take a Pesach and Yishechtet Shelo Lishmo for the wrong category, it's pasul, not kosher. If you take another kind of korban like a chagiga and Yishechtet Shelo Lishmo, having in mind, say, a Pesach, yes, it's kosher after the fact to be applied in the Mizbeach. So, meaning it's on some level it's a mitzvah. Okay. The second thing you need to understand to preach the machlokas here is that while Rabbi Yeshua holds that if you were making an honest mistake on Shabbos in your attempts to do a mitzvah and you achieve some level of mitzvah, so you will indeed be exempt from being a chatas, but that's predicated on the fact that it was an honest mistake. If you essentially are a reckless idiot, that's not called an honest mistake. And at that point, if a person was totally reckless and just being totally foolish or not paying attention or not being responsible, that can't be called an honest mistake. And therefore, even though it was a shogeg and even though a mitzvah was done, he'll still be liable to bring a chatas because we can't call that, in my words, an honest mistake, meaning it was reckless. Okay, so while that second category, the recklessness, has no application when it comes to the bris milah, it will certainly have an application over here in the context of the Korban Pesach. So here we go inside. The Mishnah starts with a very straightforward case. HaPesach sheshachatu shlo lishmo. If you slaughter a Korban Pesach, having in mind the wrong category, you're thinking this is a chagiga, for example. So then, that makes the Korban Pesach invalid, and therefore if you do it b'Shabbos, on Shabbos, which is forbidden, because slaughtering animals on Shabbos in general is forbidden, and Isra d'Oraisa of Shechita is one of the 39 malachas, only that since the Torah stipulates b'mo'ado, the Korban Pesach must be offered on the 14th of Nisan, if it falls on a Shabbos, as we said before, it pushes off Shabbos. But in this case, you didn't offer a Korban Pesach, you botched this, it's invalid, and that being the case, you slaughtered, it's a shkaga on Shabbos, no mitzvah is done, therefore everyone will agree, chayav alav chatas, you'll have to bring a Korban Chatas, a sin offering, to atone for the fact that you were Machal Shabbos, you violated Shabbos b'shogeg inadvertently. However, ushar kol hazvachim, other offerings, for the most part, sheshachatan l'shum pesach, that you slaughtered having a Korban Pesach in mind. So let's just talk about a chagiga, for example. You take a chagiga, an animal that was, the case is, this animal was consecrated as a chagiga already, and then it gets brought mistakenly as a Korban Pesach. So we said that at least b'di'evan, after the fact, will make for a valid offering. So it's a level of mitzvah on some level. So then, im einan ru'uyin, if we're talking about the kind of animal which simply was totally not befitting of being a Korban Pesach, meaning this animal was a cow, or it was a female animal, or it was a mature ram, as opposed to an animal's first year. So anyone who's paying the least bit of attention would realize that this cow was not a Korban Pesach, can't bring cows a Korban Pesach, and therefore it's not going to qualify as an honest mistake. The Hebrew term would just be toa b'davar mitzvah. You can't call that making a mistake and trying to perform a mitzvah. You're just being a reckless idiot. You're bringing a cow and thinking it's a Korban Pesach. What in the world are you thinking? So there, even Rabbi Yeshua is going to agree, it's not an honest mistake, it's just recklessness, and therefore you will not get the waiver of bringing the Korban Chatas. Instead, you have to bring a Korban Chatas. Chayev, says the Mishnah. Everyone agrees you'll be chayev to bring a Chatas because you, even though you did some modicum of mitzvah, as much as this cow, let's say, is still kosher, but you couldn't possibly think you were doing a mitzvah of Korban Pesach, you're being reckless. So you're not toward the Dvar Mitzvah, you're not making a mistake in doing a mitzvah with good intentions, not an honest mistake, and therefore you're liable to bring a Chatas according to everybody. But the middle case, Imru Uyinhain, if you had a sheep, this sheep had been consecrated as a chagiga, let's say. You, when you're slaughtering it, think it's meant to be a Korban Pesach. You made a mistake. Accidents happen. You're trying your best. It's an honest mistake. It looks like it could be a Korban Pesach. It's like every other little sheep in its first year male. You just didn't realize or didn't know that someone had consecrated this as a chagiga. Okay, accidents happen. In such a scenario, by slaughtering this animal, thinking it's a Korban Pesach, b'di'eved, you still have a valid offering. B'di'eved, it can be brought on the Mizbeach. B'di'eved, it's kosher, and it was an honest mistake. So in that case, Rabbi Eliezer Mechayev Chatas, Rabbi Eliezer says, listen, the bottom line is you Mechal Shabbos, you violated Shabbos, you can't slaughter on Shabbos. There's no dispensation for slaughtering this animal. It wasn't meant to be a Korban Pesach. The fact that a mitzvah came out of it, on some level, who cares? You violated Shabbos, and therefore, chai v'chatas, you have to bring a sin offering. And Rabbi Yeshua Poter, Rabbi Yeshua says that's the classic case of a tov b'dvar mitzvah person who erred in trying to do a mitzvah. It was an honest mistake. And a mitzvah even came out of it because the offering is kosher. So in that case, he exempts this person who did the slaughtering from bringing a korban chatas. Now, the Mishnah continues. Rabbi Elazar is going to try to convince Rabbi Yeshua that in this scenario, Rabbi Yeshua should agree that in the case we just described, that the person who slaughtered the chagiga, thinking it was a Pesach, should have to bring a korban chatas. What's his rationale? He brings a kol v'chomer. He says, listen, I'm Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar says to Rabbi Yeshua, Ma im ha-pesach shehu mutter lishmo. He says, listen, offering a korban Pesach, which is what you're supposed to do, and you're allowed to slaughter it on Shabbos for the sake of bringing korban Pesach because of the pasuk b'moado, kishashina shmo. If you're bringing korban Pesach and you have the wrong thought, you've now invalidated, and chayv, you have to bring a chatas now because you can't slaughter an animal once it turned out to be an invalid offering, so now you've just been Mechal Shabbos, and you have to bring a Korban Chatas, and Rabbi Yeshua agrees to that. So if for a Korban Pesach, which you're supposed to bring, you make a think of the wrong category, you're on the hook for a Chatas. So doesn't stand to reason that Zvachim Shehen Asur in Lishman, bringing a Chagiga, which you couldn't do in the first place, so you're not getting off the ground. It's like, no, not it's a disaster from the outset. And Shishina Shman, worse, you even have the wrong intention in terms of what category it should be. So it was forbidden in the first place, and you botched it more than that. Eino din sheichayev, doesn't it make sense that, doesn't stand to reason that you should have to bring a chatas? It's even worse. It's worse to bring a Pesach Shloshmo. It's a Chagiga Shloshmo. You shouldn't, from the outset, you shouldn't bring it. So that's his argument. Rabbi Yeshua is going to reject that, because Rabbi Yeshua, as we know, holds that you can't really compare the two because the Korban Pesach done for the wrong category, Shlo Lishmo, is invalid. Whereas the Chagiga done Shlo Lishmo for the sake of a Pesach is, after the fact, yes, valid. So that's a Tovah Devar Mitzvah. It's you were trying to do the right thing and something good came out of it because it is valid after the fact. So you can't compare them. That's the case here. So Rabbi Yeshua says back, Amar Rabbi Yeshua, lo, I reject that logic. Ima Marta B'Pesach Sheshinahu L'Devar Asur. You're going to talk about a Korban Pesach. There, if you have the wrong category in mind and you change what it should have been from a Pesach to a Chagig in your mind, so now you've done something forbidden and there's no mitzvah coming out of it. So that's why you're obligated to bring a Chatas. How could you possibly compare that? Tomar b'zavachim sheshinan l'davar mutter. How could you compare that to other categories of offerings, like say a Chagiga, where when you have the Pesach in mind for it, or any other category, but a Pesach in mind for it, so then it's after the fact, yes, a mitzvah. So you can't compare the two. If you're attempting to do a mitzvah and something and what you've after the fact came out as being valid, I say, says Rabbi Yeshua, you don't have to bring a korban chatas. So Rabbi Elazar is going to respond back and say, nope. I'm going to prove to you that you don't hold that way, because I'm going to prove to you I have another case where even you're going to agree, Rabbi Yeshua, that after the fact this thing is kosher. This offering is kosher, and therefore it's on some level still a mitzvah, and yet you're going to obligate the bring of a korban chatas. And what's the case? The case is if you bring an animal which was meant to be, let's say, a chagiga, and you have in mind that it should be one of the communal offerings, let's say a tamid or a musaf, let's say a musaf, right, that you bring on Shabbos. So you have in mind you're bringing a musaf the on Shabbos. So even Rabbi Yeshua is going to agree in such a case, you're obligated to bring a chatas. We'll explain why in a minute. And therefore, that would be an example of where you're trying to do a mitzvah, you made a mistake, you end up doing some modicum of mitzvah, and nevertheless, even Rabbi Yeshua is going to agree, you bring a chatas for that. So that will be the case that will serve as the... what's the word I want? Will serve as the... example, I can't think of the word I want now right now. The example to show that even Rabbi Yeshua should agree that you should bring a chatas if you bring a chagiga and have in mind there should be a korban Pesach, for example. So here's what he says. He says, Amla Rabbi Eliezer, a muret tzibur yochichu. I'll prove it to you from the offering of public offerings like a, let's call it the musaf. Technically, a muret tzibur really means like the sacrificial parts of the communal offerings. I don't know exactly why the Mishnah refers to offering by its sacrificial parts. But anyways, that's what it means for sure. She'en mutar in lishman. If you would bring a korban musaf and have a korban musaf in mind on Shabbos, you're supposed to do that. Everything's fine, just like the korban tamid. Everything's fine. But vashochet lishman chayev. Nevertheless, if you take an animal which was consecrated to be something else, like the chagiga, and you shecht it, having in mind this should be the tamid or this should be a musaf, so you have to bring a chatas for that. And there's an example where you're trying to do a mitzvah. There's, after the fact, there's some monocle mitzvah here because this animal is still kosher, and yet even you, Rabbi Yeshua, agree that in such a scenario you have to bring a korban chatas. So this should be a good, the word's still not coming to my mind, but I want, precedent. This should be a good precedent case to tell you that you should have to bring a chatas when you slaughter a chagiga, having in mind a korban pesach. So, Amar lo Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yeshua says, no, lo. How could you compare the korban musaf or the korban tamid, which is finite in number? There are just two tamidin brought. There's just two musaf offerings brought. It's like a small number. Everyone keep track. You can't call it, these are my words again, an honest mistake to have lost track of where those two musafin or the two tamidin are, because there's just two of them. You should keep track of how they've been offered, which ones are meant to be offered. It doesn't reach the level of Toeb b'dvar mitzvah, an honest mistake, when it's so easy to keep track of. Tomer b'pesach, you can't equate that to a korban pesach. She'ein lo kitzba, there's like innumerable animals that are being offered korban pesach. And it's one animal which is dedicated, consecrated as a chagiga, and being brought as a pesach. I mean, what Rabbi Yusha says, what do you want? There's thousands of psachim being brought. They all look the same. They're all moving the same. It's a balagan over here. Person, accidents happen. That's a legitimate accident for which I'll exempt a person. In contrast, the communal offerings, there's just two of them. There's just two, so if you botch that up, you're just being reckless. You're being reckless, kind of like offering a female animal and thinking it's going to be a korban pesach. So that's where it ends. And Rabbi Yeshua knows, doesn't back down. He sticks to his guns that if you offer a chagiga, having in mind it should be a korban pesach, after the fact, even though you slaughtered on Shabbos, you won't bring a korban chatas. And when the din is like Rabbi Yeshua. Period. There's one other sheet here, Reb Meir is even more lenient than Rabbi Yeshua, and Reb Meir holds that even the case of the musafin and the tamid and the communal offerings, if you try to do a mitzvah, and since a nominal mitzvah came out of it, then you will never be chayav to bring a chatas. In other words, he's even in that case, he's lenient. And that's what it says here, Reb Meir Omer, af hashochet l'shem emurei tzibur, even if you had, let's say, a chagiga, which you slaughtered on Shabbos, saying this is going to be for the sake of bringing one of the musafin or one of the tamidin, even though there's only two of those and it's easy to keep track of, since you're trying to do a mitzvah, and that will still reach the standard called quote-unquote honest mistake, according to Rabbi Meir, and since after the fact some modicum of mitzvah was achieved, because this animal is still, the offering is still valid, so pater, according to Rabbi Meir, you'll be exempt from being a korban chatas. Again, but the halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua, meaning in such a scenario, having in mind the musaf or the tamid, that would not be sufficient. You would be, according to Rabbi Yeshua and the halacha, you would be chayav chatas on that. Perek Vav, Mishnah Vav, 6-6, the last of the perek, and one more on shechting a korban pesach, making it pasul, invalidating it on Shabbos, and therefore being culpable for bringing a chatas, a sin offering. So for one to be liable for a chatas, he has to do an avera b'shogeg. B'shogeg means that his act was intentional, but his violation of Shabbos was unintentional. He didn't realize what he was doing was forbidden. Meaning he maybe forgot it was Shabbos, he forgot this, or didn't realize this particular act was forbidden on Shabbos, etc. If there are circumstances beyond his control, meaning that he either simply couldn't do better, or his act was an expression of his own will, and his violation was an expression of his own will, so then that person is not called a shogeg, but an ones. An ones means someone who is circumstances beyond his own will, or his own control. So in such a scenario, if a person was an ones, so then he would not be liable for a korban pesach. Okay, so the basic point of our mission here is, if one slaughters a korban pesach, if the korban, even b'di'evid after the fact, is pasul, invalid, then he'll be liable for a chatas, assuming he could have done better if he would have tried harder. If there were circumstances totally beyond his control, then even if he slaughtered the korban pesach and it turns out it was invalid, he will not be liable for a chatas. Mishnah says inside, shechatush lo la'ochlav, if a person on Erev Pesach, which falls out on the Shabbos, shechts the Korban Pesach, and he has in mind that the people who are going to be distributed to this Korban Pesach are people who are unable to eat from its meat. As we explained in the previous parak, that means they're either too old or too sick or too young, unable to eat even a kazayas. So if all the people who he's having in mind to shechta for, if none of them can eat a kazayas, then the korban is invalid. And same goes vishlo lemenuyav. If he has in mind that all the people who will be participating in this korban are not people who are pre-registered on it, or he has, let's say, no one in mind. He says, you know, it's the Chabad house brings the korban Pesach, and they say, shech this one forever shows up to our Seder unexpectedly. No, those are not menuyav. They weren't appointed and registered ahead of time, and therefore such a korban would be invalid. La'arelin, if everyone who is shechting for are all uncircumcised, even if they are rightly so uncircumcised, I mean, let's say, for example, they had a patur, they're exempt because they come from a family of hemophiliacs, and his previous brothers died from bris milah. Even so, he's an arel, he may not participate. So if all the people who are to be intending to, when the Kohen shechts his animal, having in mind all those people, if they're all arelim, none of them have been circumcised, the Korban Pesach is invalid. And finally, vila tamein, if all the people who he has in mind are tame, meaning they're unable to participate in eating the Korban Pesach. So in all those four scenarios, since no one's going to be able to eat this Korban Pesach, the Korban Pesach is pasul, and since it's invalid, he's shechted for nothing, and one is over the issur d'oraisa of shechita, which is taking the life of a creature, on Shabbos, which is forbidden, and since he did it to b'shogeg, he did it not realizing that one of these things were in play, he didn't realize that he was doing a issur Shabbos, and this would make it pasul, then he's chayev, he's obligated to bring a chatas, a sin offering. You might ask, a general rule when it comes to being liable is kol makalkel, if a person does a destructive act as opposed to a constructive act on Shabbos, so then he's pater from bringing a chatas. And if you're taking a nice sheep and you're rendering it pasul and useless, so why is that not called makalkel, and therefore you're only in derabanan territory and would not be culpable for a chatas? The answer is because, first of all, every animal, and here the case are, you know, goats and sheep, so they're all have a one-way ticket to becoming a nevela, a carcass that conveys tuma. The way you can save a goat or sheep from becoming a nevela and a source of tuma is by making it a shchuta, slaughtering it. If you slaughter it as per the Jewish ritual law, as shchita goes, lalacha, so you've saved it from becoming a nevela, it won't become a nevela, it's a shchuta, will never convey tuma. So that's an improvement. So that alone would be considered no longer a makalkel. Shchita is an improvement in all events. Moreover, in this particular case, so in this scenario we have here, if a person shechted this goat, let's say, and he had in mind people who none of them could eat the goat, it's pasul, but the goat actually has some level of kashrus to it, in as much as if the emurim from this animal were put on the mizbeach, so it's kosher enough after the fact to not require you taking down the emurim. So there's some level, meaning you don't have to remove those sacrificial parts from the altar. So that means on some level it's a little bit kosher, and that means it's sort of some level of improvement. That'll be enough then to make it not makalkel for both those reasons. On the other hand, if the person, the Kohen who shechts it la'ochlav v'shlo la'ochlav, having some people in mind who are capable of eating and some who are not capable of eating the Korban Pesach's meat, or la'menuyav v'shlo la'menuyav, some people were registered, some people were not registered ahead of time, or la'mulin v'la'arelin, or some people were circumcised and some people were not circumcised, or la'tahorin v'la'tamein, some people were tahor, some were tameh. So in all four of those scenarios, some people that he had in mind could participate in the Korban Pesach, making the Korban Pesach kosher, valid, and therefore pater, he's certainly exempt from any chatas because he did a legitimate act of shechting Korban Pesach, which is kosher at least after the fact. He shouldn't have had those people in mind, but even though he did, the animal's kosher, the offering's kosher. Now, shechato, what happens if he slaughters the Korban Pesach? V'nimtza ba'al mum. After the fact, he discovers that this animal is a ba'al mum and has a blemish, which renders it forbidden to be brought as an offering. The pasuk in Vayikra says, kol asher bo mum, any animal that has on it a blemish, lo sakrivu, may not be offered. So if it has one of the blemishes that are actually enumerated in Maseches Bechoros in the sixth parak, see over there, like for example a wart or cataract or a split or whatever in its lip and that kind of stuff, so the animal is considered imperfect and cannot be brought as a korban. So if he does that, he'll be liable because he made a mistake slaughtering an invalid offering. In contrast, shachatu v'nimtzo treifa b'seiser, if he shechts it and it turns out after the fact that it had some trefa, some fatal flaw that would cause it to ultimately die. Like, for example, it had a hole in its intestine or a hole in its lung or something like that. So, but it's a besaser in a place you couldn't see it. In other words, how could you possibly know what the lungs of this animal looks like till you open it up? So you didn't know. So then when you shecht it, you'll be pater, you'll be exempt from bringing a chatas because you're not considered to be a shogeg. You're an ones. You couldn't have done better. Circumstances were under control. How could you know that inside the animal would have some fatal flaw that would make it a treif and not kosher? Just to contrast back to the previous case, when it comes to the mum, so these mumin, the blemishes are external phenomena, and in fact there's a halacha that for the 4 days leading up to the offering of a sacrifice, you're supposed to check it to make sure it has no mumin, has no blemishes. So the blemish should have been detected, and since you didn't detect it, you could have done better. Okay, it was an accident, so it's just a shogeg, but then to rectify the situation, you'll need to bring a korban chatas. In contrast, when it comes to the mum, the trefa, by the way, some trefas are external. If it would be an external, mauled animal, certainly you could not call that being an onus. But if it's a besace or a hidden trefa, a hidden flaw inside the animal, so then you couldn't do better, and therefore you're an onus, and therefore you're pater. Shechato v'noda l'mosh v'noda. First, this Kohen shechts this Korban Pesach. V'noda, after the fact that after he shechts it, he comes to learn shemashchu habalim es yadam, that the people who originally had been the owners, the people who were registered for this particular animal, they withdrew from that animal. Literally, mashchu yadam means like they pulled their hands away, but it means they found the animal they liked more, so they withdrew their registry on this particular animal, and they registered for a different animal. And people are actually allowed to do that before the Korban Pesach is offered, before it's shechted anyways. But if everyone is Moshech Yadam, everyone withdraws from this particular animal, there's no one left on it, so then it's not valid as a Korban Pesach. So now if the Kohen shechted it for them, this will be invalid Korban, and therefore he's now been Mechal Shabbos inadvertently. But as we'll see in a second, what was he supposed to do? He can go on the chazaka, their basic presumption that the karbonos that are delivered to him to shecht in the Beis Mikdash on Erev Pesach are kosher animals for shechita. How is he supposed to know who is or isn't registered on it? And therefore, he was in his rights to go and shecht it, and therefore he'll be considered an ones. The circumstances were totally beyond his control. So we'll see in a moment he'll be exempt from being a chatas. So the cases here again, number one, if they're mashchu yadayim, if the owners, they withdrew from the registry, osha mesu, or if all the owners, people who were registered on the animal, they all died prior to the shechting of the animal. So now it's, again, has no owners, and therefore it's invalid, but he is an onus, because how do you know that? And same goes, shenitmu, if all the people in that family who were registered on this particular animal became tame, again, they're invalid persons, and therefore this offering is not valid for them, but the Kohen who shechted it on their behalf, how was he supposed to know? In all those cases, that Kohen is pater, b'pnei shachat b'rishos. When he slaughtered it, he was within his rights to assume that it was a legitimate animal for shechting, and therefore, although it was Mechal Shabbos, he was an onus, it was circumstances beyond his control. I keep on saying that Kohen slaughters it. Don't forget that you don't need to be a Kohen to slaughter any korbanos, and the custom in general was that the Bailim, the owners, were the ones who shechted the Korban Pesach typically, because they're just need too many people to get this done quickly. But nevertheless, I use the example of a Kohen in this Mishnah because obviously it becomes nonsensical or complicated if the Bailim are shechting. How could it be that the Bailim withdrew his hands, etc.?